good afternoon. That's so feeble. Good afternoon. Thank you. Oh, cool. Actually, we can do one right now. Yeah, there has been a suggestion that a door prize might be in order. What do we think? Now, see, that's better. Good afternoon didn't do it, but door prizes did. So we're going to do a door prize. Let me make a quick announcement before we actually hear who won what. And the announcement is one that I know Debbie Grubb had some discussion with you about yesterday, but I'm forced to repeat it because I have received, I guess 4 or 5 complaints from innocent bystanders, as it were, that at various places they have managed to those of us who are traversing the halls and outer areas of this building are not required to do so with an additional burden. See, that was good. All right, are we ready?
We are ready, and Jay's going to bring you. You get to pull the name, so ooh, whoever fault it is, it's going to be yours.
Doesn't have a J in it, though.
No, it won't.
So, who is? What are we pulling for here?
It is a $25 Walmart gift card, ooh, courtesy of the Pensacola chapter.
And the name is. Peter Rabbit.
Janice Revel.
Janice is here. All right. We're on a roll. Can we do one more? So, Jay, why don't we let Ed pick the next one? All right. All right.
Bubble, bubble, toil and trouble.
Doom, 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 doom.
And this prize will be the 4-disc set of Pathway to Independence, a guide for people with vision loss. And by chance, do we know who donated this, Cassandra?
Debbie Hazelton?
Ah, yep. It's a Debbie Hazelton donation. Thank you, Debbie, wherever you are. I knew that. It's okay. She's having fun in the exhibit hall, of course. The name is Sandra Marecki.
Not here, apparently.
Sandra's not here, and I also...
She's selling tickets, so she's selling our air.
Paul, what do you think?
All right, she gets it. All right, thank you very much, you guys. Let me make a very brief kind of opening statement to our town hall meeting, and then I'll introduce our guest speaker. The town hall meeting is a tradition that has become a significant part of our FCB meeting. When we give the Division of Blind Services an opportunity to tell us what's going on and what some of the new things that are happening at the division are, but it also gives us an opportunity to raise some questions with the Division of Blind Services. As many of you know, the director of the Division of Blind Services, Joyce Hildreth, resigned from her position in December. Since then, we have had an acting director whose name is Elisa McKinley, and Elisa has won the admiration, I think, of just about everyone who has worked with her. She is the director of vocational rehabilitation And in spite of all my blandishments to the contrary, she, A, has absolutely no interest in becoming director of the Division of Blind Services, but also has no interest in doing more than managing DBS on an interim basis. She's absolutely worked tirelessly to make sure that no attempts are likely to be forthcoming that the Division of Blind Services and the Division of Vocational Rehabilitation will become a single agency. I think she has really done an excellent job as a steward in working with her on the Rehabilitation Council and in various other capacities. I really have had nothing good to say for her. It was Elisa's intention to be here with us today. Unfortunately, fate intervened in that she became a grandmother last week. And I absolutely supported her decision to be with her daughter and her third child. She had twins a couple of years ago, and now this is her third grandchild. So representing the Division of Blind Services is someone who is no stranger to FCB and no stranger to many of us here, and it gives me great pleasure to introduce to all of you representing the Division of Blind Services and presenting their report, the director of the Rehabilitation Center for the Blind in Daytona, or whatever they call it these days, Mr. Ed Hudson.
Thank you, Paul. I appreciate that. And it is the Rehabilitation Center for the Blind and Visually Impaired. You're on the right track. As Paul said, Elisa deeply regrets not being able to join us here today. She is enjoying grandmotherhood and should return to her office in a week or so. So in the meantime, I'm going to go over some talking points, and I'll certainly try to answer any questions that I can. And if I do not know the answer, I'll get your information and direct you to who may be able to give you answers to those questions. Well, let's start off with, I'm sure, the big question that everybody is interested in, the search for the new DBS director. The governor's office has become involved in taking the lead on this. A lady named Elaine Jordan has been taking applications and resumes. She's been doing interviews and follow-up interviews and research. She will develop a final list and give it to the Commissioner of Education, Tony Bennett. And the commissioner at that point will make the final decision on the next DBS director. I expect he'll receive this list sometime in June, and hopefully sometime in July we will have a permanent director in place. There's been a national search taking place. I know they received applications from folks inside Florida and nationally, so I'm fairly confident they have a good list of applicants to choose from, and that we will. Well, in my conversations with Elisa, she's been great. As Paul said, I think anyone who interacts with her will immediately understand why she's the director of DVR. Very bright, very down to earth, and she has said that she believes DBS deserves a really good director, and she's going to do her best to make sure that that occurs. So we'll see. Stay tuned. Legislatively this year, a lot going on in the legislature. We were afraid we would lose some positions, but we did not. We came out intact with the same number that we went into the session with, so we at one point thought we would maybe lose a dozen positions, but it didn't work out that way, so that's good. Yeah, I'm real happy about that, believe me. The budget appears to be fairly stable so far. As you know, most of you keep up with national news. The sequestration recently took place in the U.S. Congress. We were worried about cuts in our funding coming down through RSA. I talked with Elisa, and she, as director of DBR, pledged to help mitigate those cuts by seeing how and if she could absorb most of it in DBR without passing it on to DBS. So I think some of the things to come out of this interim situation, we've developed a good relationship with someone who I think will be a friend to DBS and will be very good to work with in the future. I think if the next director will maintain relations, we have a friend in DBR and someone who will help facilitate better working relationship and closer working relationship between DBS and DBR, and that can only benefit our clients. Okay, another subject that folks may or may not be interested in, contracts. The contracts with the private facilities are currently in a stage where, and I'm talking about the community rehab providers, the lighthouses, in process of something called an ITN, and that stands for invitation to negotiate. When you get into all this contract mumbo jumbo, there are different, you know, it, like anything else, has its acronyms. They do an RFP, request for proposal, request for quote. Well, DOE mandated that these contracts now go through an ITN process, which basically means they are going to be put out to bid. Current process, in February, DBS finalized its proposal, and it's going back and forth between DBS and DOE at the moment, and their contracts and procurement and legal section. When they settle on the form and content of the ITN, it will then go to DFS, Department of Financial Services, which will review it. When those steps are complete, it will be put out for bid. The current contractors will be notified, and people will be allowed to make their submittals and ask questions, and the questions will be posted. And my understanding is that this will probably run longer than usual because of the nature of this situation. And then a final group will be selected, and further negotiations will take place with those individuals to finalize the contracts. Now, I don't have an exact time frame, and I, at this point, don't believe anyone involved in this process does. The current contracts were extended another 6 months to cover this interim period. Also, anyone involved in this situation cannot discuss the ITN, whether DBS employees or what have you, because you really can't divulge details about contract preparation until the final result is published for the bids. Some other interesting things. I'm going to toss out a couple of things here during this presentation to think about. We've been busy at the center. One thing I want to happily announce is the help desk has been reestablished. There's the process now being reestablished. Mark Lear. Mark Lear will resume his formal duties in manning the help desk and providing technical assistance, DBS clients in vocational situations, college. And he is also continuing to do the BARD support for the Braille and Talking Book Library. Let's see. The Bureau of Business Well, hold on. I'm not finished with the center. I'm sorry. Turn the page. The center has also been involved in a couple other initiatives. One, it's recently taken on some interesting statewide consequences. Don't know if you followed the debate in the legislature concerning digital learning for the school system. A recent bill was passed which opens up that arena to many outside vendors out of the state of Florida and, you know, all over the country. So this is going to expand the options for the school systems who are engaging in digital online learning. Well, that's great, except, and you know where I'm going. We at the center and our access technology instructors have recently been tasked with assessing websites who are currently providing services for digital learning through the Florida Virtual School, who is the arbiter or has been the arbiter of these programs in the past. I have not had a chance to completely read through this legislation that has just passed. I've read a couple of summaries. As I said, it opens up the field to many more vendors, providing many more options, which in a way is a good thing. But when we come down to the situation of accessibility, that may or may not be a good thing. I can tell you we have not finished the evaluation on the courses that we've been assigned so far, but there has been accessibility issues. With the increase in the number of vendors, it's going to be problematic as to whether we can continue evaluating all these different offerings. And this expands the way it could exponentially. I just don't think we can. Some other provisions are going to have to be investigated for assuring that these vendors who are providing websites and digital information to public school children are providing accessible websites. This is an issue that's going to take some more exploration and some thought. This is larger than DBS. This is going to be involved with us doing, as blind people, advocacy and being aware of how this is going to take place and is it going to be accessible. Bureau of Business Enterprise, vending. Any vendors in here? Yeah, okay. Oh, before I go any further, I forgot at the beginning, any DBS employees, I know there's some folks from the center, Cassandra and Doug,
Randy?
Any other DBS employees? Virginia, hi. DBS, Daytona. Okay. As I said, Bureau of Business Enterprise, the vendors. I am told that a new VA hospital will be opening soon here in Orlando. And it appears at this point that DBS will have some or all of the vending concessions in that facility. So I think this should open up some new opportunities for employment. And that's as it stands now. And we have no reason to expect that will change at any point. But having been in these situations in the past, it's not over till it's over. So, you know, hopefully this will come to pass as we expect it to. There are still challenges in vending. Many of the smaller operations and post offices are closing around the state. But the division has recently hired, well, not recently, he's been on board about a year, an individual to do marketing for Bureau of Business Enterprise and to pursue and develop new vending opportunities. At this point, we still have over 140 facilities around the state of Florida. And hopefully we can expand that. And as I said, as these smaller facilities and post offices close, replace them with other opportunities. Okay, technology. always an interesting subject. Recently, and this is just something I ran across, the Federal Communications Commission passed a act mandating that providers who are putting web browsers on mobile devices, i.e. cell phones, make them accessible to blind and visually impaired individuals. Excuse me, I'm standing up, holding a mic here, moving Braille pages around. So. However, one line that caught my attention in this legislation, as I said, I have not fully read through the entire text, but it talks about making, as I said, these devices accessible to those blind and visually impaired, blah, blah, blah. There's a little caveat in there, except where not achievable. Now, what's that supposed to mean? Except where not achievable. Yeah. I didn't see any immediate language defining what achievable would be or would not be and that type of thing. So, I'm just pointing this out again is with the situation with digital learning for the school system. There are a lot of challenges still before us that it's going to take a great deal of advocacy and attention and folks even outside of DBS. This is not areas where DBS itself can, you know, strictly address these issues and correct them. It's going to take a combined partnership, DBS and advocacy groups, to make sure that these initiatives and technology are accessible and beneficial to blind citizens of the state of Florida. And that's going to take a lot of work. That's pretty much my presentation. I'm open for questions now. Sure.
We'll get to the mic, Gene.
We are streaming. So
I understand that through Apple, AT&T as a provider of telephone service is already accessible, so why can't others be?
Well, that would be up to the individual providers and the type of phones they are using and technology. And how much effort they want to put into it. I mean,
it is achievable
if it's done. But
well, the language that's used in Title III of the ADA is readily achievable, and the definition actually sets a pretty low threshold in terms of what the responsibility of companies are. I think it's going to be up to folks at the national level, like ACB and other interested groups. To be sure that we get as much out of the 21st Century Video Accessibility Act, which is what this is all a part of. It's coming, Ms. Gwen.
You're about to be broadcasting to the world on ACB Radio.
How long will it be before the VA open it here in Orlando?
My understanding is sometime the first quarter of next year.
Okay. The reason why I'm asking the question, because sometimes it's not what you know, it's who you know. I got into the veteran nursing home on Mason Avenue. Through a veteran years ago through the college. And I've been there seven years now as a psychosocial volunteer. So that's the reason why I'm asking, because it helps when you know someone there to get in. So thank you. I used to be a DBS client.
Thank you, ma'am.
And you're still in Daytona, correct?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Other questions for Mr. Hudson? I have one.
Oh, come on now.
Mr. Hudson, I understand that there is some new construction that's going on at the library. Maybe you could tell us a little about that?
I will touch on that. I was not aware if Susan Roberts would be here and doing a presentation on that. But, yes, the Braille and Talking Book Library is under, in fact, it has begun a renovation project, which will, in essence, reduce the size of the building and address some other issues. Much of the construction of that building is quite old. Just building integrity issues need to be corrected, and also ADA issues with accessibility of certain parts of it must be addressed. And as you are probably aware or may not be aware, the National Library Service has mandated that regional libraries reduce or virtually abolish their cassette collection within the next couple of years. Most of the space at the library has been consumed by cassettes. You know, they have a couple of million, or had a couple of million of those. They've pretty much reduced that to, and I think eventually they're supposed to keep one copy of each cassette.
Right.
So when you go from 90 copies of a book down to one, it frees up a lot of space. Mm-hmm. So the much of the warehouse area will be demolished, and the administration area will be demolished, and part of the other part of the library will be reconfigured for the administration area. Much as I said, the library was constructed over many decades and added on almost in modular fashion. Mm-hmm. Not always necessarily from a construction standpoint of view the most efficient way or the best way to maintain a building long term. So there are various issues with drainage, leakage, the way the different units are joined together. So I think this will correct some of that.
I'm going to ask a follow-up question that may be out of your area of competence. So if it is, I'll certainly understand. One of the things that characterized the Florida Regional Talking Book Library was that we had inherited a number of special Braille collections, and my question is: do we have your assurance that those special Braille collections will be held harmless, and that we're continuing to do all we can to maintain them?
Yes, the Braille collection will be maintained now. I understand they are going through a process of weeding out older volumes that have, through usage or just aged, been damaged, whether it be, you know, mold or just aged, and they're getting rid of some of those. But in the most part, the Braille collection will be maintained.
I hope you'll communicate that, particularly with regard to the special collections where there are a number of only copies in existence in Braille of a number of books, that we will do our best to protect and safeguard and maintain those.
I will. I'll talk to Susan Roberts and certainly, you know, Alicia and the new director to make sure that we do maintain those collections. But that was when this project started. I'm somewhat in on construction projects on the campus. This one's not related to any of the facilities that report to the center, but I did emphasize to them that we need to maintain the Braille collection, and maintain the Braille collection as it is, other than weeding out books that are no longer viable just from age and wear and tear. But
very good.
We need to keep this. Braille is important, and we do not want to lose the space. And I know they are the areas where the Braille collection is currently housed. They are going to be renovated also, and we are maintaining the collection, and that area will stay up. The areas that are being demolished are primarily cassette
storage areas
in the warehouse area.
Cool. Other questions for Mr. Ed? I love calling him Mr. Ed.
Yes, I have a question.
Yes, ma'am.
Going back to the contract issues, I'm interested in finding out how safeguards are going to be put in place to ensure that the abuses of the past will not reoccur, and so that to ensure that clients are given more choice as to who is going to provide their services, especially in the area of employment. employment, as in the past, employment contracts have gone exclusively to the lighthouses, and there are a number and variety of choices of people who can provide employment services to clients. That's one. And just to make sure that, as in the past, contracts don't go to, say, the director's friends. So I want to find out how that is going to be handled.
Well, that's certainly a loaded question. There's a lot of stuff there. I'm not going to get into, there's been different debates going on about the efficacy of the contracts in the past and how that was handled and whether or not there was anything going on that should not have been. But as I said, I cannot comment too much on this process because, as I said, it is still in process. But as I said, the contracts and procurement section and legal section of DOE are reviewing these contracts thoroughly, and then after they are finished with them, they will go to the Department of Financial Services. Now, I don't know if you're aware or not, but the Department of Financial Services, it is a state agency, but the director of DFS, Jeff Atwater, is an elected official. He does not report to the governor or anyone else. And I can tell you that DFS, in my dealings with them, were very thorough about the language and details of purchase agreements and contracts. In fact, I've managed several contracts, nothing to do with private facilities. I just had a contract audited by them, which came out, the clean bill of health. Oh, thank God. So as to how the ITN will be structured, I really can't get in. And I don't know all the details because right. I'm not in that process, and they are being very very quiet about this. As I said, we do not want any details to leak out ahead of time to give any providers any type of advantage in submitting bids for these.
I'm going to add a little bit to what Ed said just to try to clarify. As the representative on the Rehabilitation Council of the Florida Council of the Blind, there was a substantial effort on our part at the Rehab Council level to try to get answers to that sort of question. That is, what are the specifics of the ITN? And we got no answers. There are probably one or two people within the Division of Blind Services who know the answer to the question that you've asked. One of them is Elisa McKinley, and probably the person who has primary responsibility for developing the initial language of that contract at least has an idea of how it started. But what Ed says is absolutely correct. That is, no one, none of the current facilities, not FASB, not the Rehab Council, not DBS counselors, not virtually all employees within the Division of Blind Services, nobody knows really what that ITN is going to look like, except for the very small number of people who have looked at it. And the way that the rules are written, if information leaks out about the ITN, that ITN becomes invalid. So the fact is none of us, including all the currently contracted facilities, are going to have any idea what that ITN is going to look like until it actually comes out. And then, even then, there is only one person in the whole state who is allowed to respond to questions with regard to that ITN, and those responses must be done publicly in a place where they can be reviewed by others.
Yes, Paul is correct. Excuse me?
It will be a web page that will be designated but hasn't been yet.
Mr. Edwards, I have the microphone, and I would like to go back, Ed, if you don't mind, to the process for hiring the next director of the Division of Blind Services.
Okay.
I understand that there is a national search, and I certainly support that. But I'm wondering, Since the director of the DOE doesn't really have expertise in blindness or the blindness movement, I'm wondering, number one, who is vetting this list of candidates for that person? And number two, will consumers have any input in their ability to submit comments or concerns to the DOE director before that person makes a decision?
Well, as I said, Elaine Jordan in the governor's office has been collecting the initial applications and resumes and interviewing people and doing some research. And I'm sure Lisa McKinley has had some input on this, and she has gotten to know the Division of Blind Services and is, you know, familiar with our programs. Now, it may be the case where if they have reached out to the heads of the consumer groups and obtained input, or other individuals, I think that has occurred.
FASB, FCB, NFBF, and the Rehab Council have all written Debbie requesting that we have input. And in fact, there's a resolution that's going to be coming before our organization tomorrow for the same thing.
But as of now, and I honor that request and certainly support it. Yeah. But as of now, there is nothing in place that guarantees that.
No, but as of now, what we can say is that Elaine Jordan has made a conscientious effort to reach out to all stakeholders and talk about what a director of the Division of Blind Services ought to be like, and to solicit specific recommendations of people we think would be appropriate.
And I can tell you they are doing fairly extensive background checks on the individuals who have submitted resumes. I don't think they're just taking them at their word. And as you know, these days with technology, internet access, and that type of thing, if someone has a prior record in public service, that's probably not too difficult to see what was going on with the areas they were working in.
More questions for Mr.
Ed? I'd like to go back to the issue regarding the cell phones accessibility. Unfortunately, I'm one of those individuals in a fixed income, and those who can afford whatever they're going to be doing, that's super. But those of us who are left behind in a fixed income cannot afford those type of adaptations on the cell phones. I had the assurance, the one that the federal government gave to the seniors, free, but it's a limited number of minutes, and I have some difficulties with that particular cell phone myself. But that's a concern I have from the perspective of those of us who are financially strapped who cannot be able to afford that device. I know that those who can't afford it, I'm happy for you, but we're left behind. Thank you.
Other questions?
Yes, I have a question.
Yes. Go ahead, Virginia. We're getting the mic to you. Okay. We got maybe one or two more questions after this, depending on how long.
Okay, my question is, it's been brought to my attention by various friends and various former clients that after they complete their computer training, these are the ones that do not have computers at home. Is it possible that maybe there could be a program where the clients can have a loan of a computer, even if it's not a desktop, but a laptop to practice so they don't forget their skills? I've had this brought to my attention in the past of different friends and different former clients. Because the policy right now says that DBS cannot provide computers for clients unless they have a job or going to school.
Or if you're in college or enrolled in an educational program. I think it's a good idea. And, you know, we can certainly talk to whoever the next director is and see how that would work out. it's a matter, you have the computer and the hardware, but you also will need some type of access software. And there are, you know, number of options with screen readers and screen magnifications, low-cost or free programs that are certainly on the market that people could use. Now, whether you could possibly use, you know, surplus computers or how that would be, you know, the mechanism of how that would be done could be worked out. But I'll bring this up to the next director and see, you know, how they want to proceed or how they feel about this. But, you know, I agree with you. Once you've gone through technology training, if you go home and, you know, you don't use it, you lose it.
Virginia, there's also an outfit in Texas, and there have been ads in recent Braille forums that makes computers available for $100, and all you have to do is apply for them.
Okay, I have a question. This is Sherry Brunn, and my question is, when you receive services from a contractor...
Closer to the mic, Sherry.
Sorry. When you receive services from a contractor, say, in my case, and I'm not trying to get personal problems in here, there was a computer difficulty, and when I talked with someone that contracted the services saying my problem had not been solved, to my satisfaction, and I work, so I need my computer issues solved. They said, well, I'm sorry, this is the only person we have that can do it. We ended up going to Freedom Scientific and said, this is the deal. One works this way, the other doesn't. Why would the same program on two different computers work? Oh, this is a focus issue. Here, 2 minutes, it was fixed. The computer guy had come written all kinds of weird JAWS scripts and stuff, and it was crazy. So what recourse do we have if services are provided by someone who honestly really doesn't, you know, either know or keep up with the continuing, development of software and what's going on and how to fix a problem? Because in my result, it was a very basic problem and a very easy fix. I just didn't know it. And so what recourse do we have when they say, well, there's only one person doing it in your area? Too bad.
This was a contractor who was contracting with DBS?
Yes.
Okay. Well, let me just tell you from my point of view, that I manage several contracts, but nothing to do with private facilities. You need to find out who the contract manager is of that contract, because there has to be a designated contract manager. And I would talk to them and tell them the issues and what is going on, and also bring it to the attention of the Bureau of Client Services. And, you know, you'd even talk to Walter Blackmont, who is the client advocate. I don't know if you're familiar with him. He's in the state office.
Okay, that'd be good.
And I can even give you his contact information if you need it.
Okay.
But to go back a second, talking about the ITN and contracts and this type of thing.
Well, just one more quick.
Yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
It was contracted through Tampa Lighthouse, not
right.
To name names.
Okay.
And when I talked to them, they said, and I did talk to the Lighthouse person, and they said, oh, I'm sorry, that's the only person we have doing it. So
you're referring to the rehab engineering contract.
Yes.
And okay, I got you now. I got you.
Sherry, there actually are some provisions that are written into that rehab engineering contract, and it isn't accurate to say. And if they said it, they weren't accurate. It isn't accurate to say that the Tampa Lighthouse is a sole source provider under that contract. There are limitations to the sole source provisions that exist under that contract, and if satisfaction isn't provided for the services that are requested within 7 days, it is possible for the local Division of Blind Services office to apply for permission to have someone else deliver the services locally. Because the whole point of this service and the whole point of going to the service delivery system that the division went to was so that services could be delivered uniformly and quickly and at a considerable cost savings. And if those things aren't happening and if the services aren't being delivered The contract was written in a way to give local area offices the opportunity to intervene and act for their clients.
Paul is absolutely correct. You can take that up with your district office, and as I said also, the contract manager needs to be aware of that, because we're talking about the ITN and the way contracts are structured. And, you know, there's been a lot of controversy about these contracts in the last couple of years, but something I think has not been, or maybe it has been focused on, and I missed it, is it's not only the way contracts are written, the way the deliverables are structured and the scope of work is defined and the options are put in for other services, it's monitoring of the contracts. Are they being monitored? Are the deliverables being met? How are people feeling about the services of the contract? And that's up to the contract manager and up to the agency to gather that information and follow up on any of those issues. That, to me, is probably one of the key things. Is much important is the way the contracts are written or the type of form that they take is monitoring of the contract. And that certainly sounds like a problem that needs to be addressed.
Ladies and gentlemen, we very much appreciate your being here at the town hall meeting. I want to thank Ed for pinch hitting for Elisa McKinley. It's not easy to suddenly be asked to stand up and pretend you're director of an agency when you're not getting the money and for the most part don't have to be in touch with a lot of the issues that the director has to. So I'd like us all to thank Ed very much for representing Elisa.
Thank you, and I look forward to seeing you guys next year.
Absolutely. And you're always welcome. We always invite Mr. Ed to our conventions. I did. The next segment of our program is going to be about another issue that I know that we in the Florida Council of the Blind are significantly excited by, and that's the issue of video or audio description. And we're going to spend the next 45 minutes or so, or 40 minutes, talking about some of the new developments in this area and perhaps some things that we can do here in Florida to forward this this process. And we once more are exerting our right to crack a whip and get slave labor out of our folks who are visiting from Massachusetts. And so joining me for this session are Kim and Brian Charlson. And I think that it's polite and correct to allow Kim to start. So, Kim, it is yours.
All right. Thank you. And I think with Paul, Brian, and I talking, we could probably go on for the next 3 hours, and I'm sure you all have that much time to give to us and are prepared to stay, you know. But I think that I am going to start by talking about kind of how I got started in audio description, because I think that I have heard over the course of the last couple of days several people express some interest about doing more at the local level to promote audio description. So I'm going to talk first about how to do audio description more at your local level with your community theater, with your organizations. I mean, some of the most innovative audio description is in the country is happening right here at some of the theme parks in the Orlando area. So the more creative ways of using audio description technology is happening right here. But I sort of started in the whole advocacy for audio description living in the Boston area, the home of WGBH. Many of you know that, of course, they started Descriptive Video Service. And being an advocate about a mile away from their studios kind of brought me into the process early on to advocate for audio description for television. And So, you know, what's happened over the course of the last 2 years with television and the implementation of CVAA, the Communication Video Accessibility Act, has been incredibly exciting. And I know we'll get to some of the issues surrounding television access to description. But being in the Boston area, we have many, many local theaters, and one of my passions for fun is I enjoy musical theater. So I love the big Broadway shows. I love the theater music. And, you know, I had an opportunity to go to an audio described performance, and I realized, man, do I ever miss so much without audio description. And I bet a lot of you feel that way with your experience with television, with your experience at movie theaters, with audio description, if you've had an opportunity to do that. And so I started advocating a lot with some of the major theater companies in the Boston area to get live description for theater. And there's a couple different scenarios that work in different communities, and maybe some of you have had some experience with that. There is kind of the volunteer describer. You call, they'll find somebody who will come, and they'll describe the show sort of just for you. And they're volunteers. Or there's the scenario that's more akin to ASL interpretation for live theater performances, which is the theater, they hire someone, they pay a describer, and there are specific dates and times that are the audio described performance for the play. And so we have adopted in the Boston area the model that is a paid describer, a specific date and time for the performance with audio description. We work with the theater to set aside, you know, a block of tickets so that the blind community can actually buy affordable tickets. A lot of the tickets are what theaters often will sell as semi-obscured or obstructed viewing, so that the tickets can be more affordable, because some of these big Broadway shows come into a community and the tickets cost $100 to go to the show. So we try to get utilize the obstructed view seating for about half the price to allow people to have a more affordable opportunity with a paid describer, with the technology, the earphone, the receiver, Braille programs, large print programs. And we do a lot of marketing in the community to make sure that people know that there's a performance and they can buy tickets, so there'll be a good turnout, so the theater will feel that their efforts are successful. If they sell out the block, you know, they're thrilled, they're delighted. If they sell the block of tickets they've set aside. So about 8 years ago, some colleagues and I wrote a book called Making Theater Accessible, A Guide to Audio Description in the Performing Arts. And the book is available for free. So any of you who want to get a copy of my book on audio description, welcome to get it in regular print, large print, electronic Word document. We make it available and accessible to anyone who's interested. So again, you can feel free to contact me. And I have two email addresses, and they're both pretty easy. Or you can contact me at Perkins, which is also a place that's pretty easy to locate. And I will give my email. It's kim.charlson, C-H-A-R-L-S-O-N, at perkins.org, or kimcharlson, all one word, at acb.org. So you can try either my emails, or you can contact me at my work number, 617-972-7249. And I'd be happy to send a copy of the book. Say the number again, 617-972-7249. So the book has in it, it's basically a plan. You would, you know, I'd be happy to give you copies for your theaters, print copies. It is a plan, a book that basically walks you and a theater through the planning process for what do you need if you want to have an audio described performance at your theater, at your local live theater. What do you have to think about? Well, you probably have to hire a describer. You need to find somebody who knows how to describe. And there are folks around. There's ways to find access to resources in the communities that can do audio description. There's a couple companies down here in the Florida area that do quite a bit of description. So I think there are some good resources here in the area to help you. And if you find that you don't have somebody in your area, maybe a project that you want to sponsor would be to have a training, to train people to become audio describers, because it's a skill and a talent. You know, we often talk about, is bad description better than no description? You know, and the principles of audio description about, you know, do we want them to tell us that someone is sad, or do we want them to say they're frowning? You know, I think the philosophy kind of is, we want description that will tell us what people see, and then we decide, we interpret what they are. Are they happy? Are they sad? Are they smiling? Why are they smiling? You know, that's an interpretation thing that every viewer of the show gets to make that decision. So a describer shouldn't tell us how we're supposed to be feeling. That's part of the experience of live theater. So if my resource book can help any of you with getting started in the local area, that I'd be delighted to give you support, again, make copies available to all of you, and give you any kind of guidance or expertise that I might have to assist you in getting started, taking that first step, reaching out to your local theaters in the area to bring in audio description.
Kim, might we want to talk about the Audio Description Institute, too?
Sure. ACB, for the last 4 years, has been very involved in the whole issue of audio description and has an audio description project. Project is run by a contract employee for ACB named Joel Snyder. We have a website. It's acb.org/ADP for audio description project. acb.org/ADP. And that will take you to a section on the ACB website that's all about the audio description project. It's got lots of great resource information about the whole FCC, the mandate for audio description on television, shows that are currently being described, what channels are providing description, the networks, the cable, lots and lots of great resources on that website to help you in kind of navigating through this challenging area that is audio description for television. And we're going to get into that more, I think, very, very soon. But one of the other things that the Audio Description Project does, each year at the ACB convention, Joel Snyder runs an institute where potential new people who are interested in being describers pay a tuition to go to a 3-day seminar that's very intensive on all the aspects of audio description, how to write it, how to present it, how to be objective in your description, and the whole beginning to end, so that you can actually prepare a script with audio description for a live performance. They also work on crafting it for a television program. There's a lot of subcontract work out there for folks who are trained describers, because of the increase in the availability of content on television with description. So that institute, last year we trained 20 people, 20 new describers from all across the country at last year's ACB convention, and I think that the enrollment in this year's institute is going to be equivalent to that in Columbus. So it's a really great opportunity for someone interested in the whole field of audio description to get some quality training, to get a certificate, and completing some coursework in the area of audio description.
The other thing I can announce now, because it probably fits in here, is the Board of Publications just reaffirmed a decision that essentially was made by our Board of Publications 6 years ago or so, and probably by early next year, a book which will amount to another audio description manual, but probably a much more detailed one than the book that Kim has written, is going to be published under the auspices of the ACB, written by Joel Snyder, and we're hoping that it will be available for sale on the ACB website and on our ADP page early next year.
Great. Good. All right. Well, I'm going to turn it over to Brian to talk about kind of what's the current development with audio description in Congress. As you know, he testified before Congress earlier this week. And his area of expertise with audio description is the user interface. So he's going to talk about user interface issues. And what in the heck does user interface mean?
One thing that Kim didn't say about access to theater that's making it successful in the Boston area is, you know, it's really hard to say, okay, we're going to set aside 20, 40, 50 seats for audio description. Now, how do you tell people that it's even there and available? So we had been doing our best. We put out, thanks to a good friend of ours who lives with Kim and I, Vicki Vogt, she puts together a listing of all the movies in town that have audio description, all of the TV shows being broadcast this week with audio description, and all of the plays that are in town with audio description. In addition, Kim arranged to have all of the theaters pay a small fee for us to publish a twice-a-year listing of what plays are coming up with audio description. So it pays for itself. It's a way for them, instead of buying ad space elsewhere, they'll buy ad space to our distribution list and underwrites the expense of getting people to the theater. All right, I want to talk about television and the movies, because both of them are impacted by what's been going on as of late. First, let's talk about television. The 21st Century Communication and Video Accessibility Act. Way too long. CVAA. The CVAA is all about getting you and me access to video wherever its source might be, starting with television. The first thing that happened as a result of this act, which I'm pleased to say was sponsored by and quite honestly kind of pushed through the whole process by my congressman Ed Markey, required first that all of the major networks, the top four, NBC, CBS, ABC, I can't remember, and Fox, that all of them had to put out 4 hours of audio-described content each and every week. So, bam, suddenly you have 16 hours of television to watch. Plus, the five major networks that have their material available only by way of cable, companies like Disney, Turner, remember the other two? Nickelodeon, TBS, TNT, USA. So there you have another 4 times 5, 20 hours of content for you to waste your time on. So now you're at 36 hours a week of audio described television. Not bad. There are some limits to that. It's in the 25 largest markets. So if you live in, oh, I don't know, Miami certainly would be one of the top 25. Tampa Bay fits in. Great. So, and the other thing is, remember that if the signal begins in those cities but travels outside of those cities, you know, these cable systems link one to the other to the other, you may be getting access to this even if you're not in one of the 25 markets directly, but indirectly. So that's the number one thing. The problem with this has been that no sooner did we get all that quantity, and it also created, by the way, a great set, a broadening industry of audio description companies. I personally think GBH description is the best description. But if we had to wait for GBH to do it all, we'd never get all of it done. So I'm delighted that there's all these other companies springing up, and they'll start playing off of one another for price and quality. But the problem we have is you turn on the TV set and where's the SAP button? The secondary audio programming button. A serious problem. Here's what Kim referred to as the user interface problem. We have the quantity. We have a way to make that quantity stay at a reasonable level and grow over time to more markets, to more stations, etc., over time. But what good does it do you if you don't have a way to turn it on or off? Now, why would you care? Couldn't you just have a friend come in and turn it on once and leave it on? Answer, no. You can't do that because many of the stations do not broadcast any audio on the describe band unless there's description. They don't rebroadcast the main audio on both channels, on the SAP and on the regular. They go dead on the SAP when it's not playing something. Or the same channel that does audio description does Spanish. And when Spanish is there and audio description is there, which one trumps?
Spanish.
Spanish. So that means I get to see, to move to a show and find out everything's in a language that unfortunately I don't speak. I'd have to ask one of my my friends to come interpret for me a second time. So you can't leave it on SAP, even if you can get a friend to do it once. So you have to turn it on, watch it, turn it off, and you can't do that independently. Why? Not just because there's not an SAP button, but because that whole selection process is done by way of a on-screen menu. And the on-screen menus don't talk yet. In October, the FCC will publish the final rules, and within 2 years, so October 2015, we are going to have all equipment that does video reception is involved in that, whether it be your set-top box, your television, whatever. Anything that's newly sold at that point forward must have accessible on-screen menus. So that's going to make things much, much better for you and I. We'll both have access to the quantity and actually be able to do it independently. There are some of us who have learned some tricks, and this isn't all going to happen in day one. When I say they must do it by that date, some will beat that target date significantly. Right now, who are the big companies here in Florida for cable?
Comcast
down here?
Yes. Well, and I think we also need to include satellite, so.
Yes, and there's satellite down here as well. But I'm going to pick on my friends at Comcast. I'm not going to pick on Comcast. I'm going to tell you how pleased I am with where Comcast is going. Because not only was I in D.C. on Tuesday, on Monday I was in Philly. So this is my third city this week. But in Philly, I met with, along with nine other blind and visually impaired people from around the country who represented ACB, NFB, APH, no, not APH, AFB, Associated Services, and Overbrook School. We got pulled together with 30 members of the Comcast staff. Four vice presidents came to present to us, plus the lead staff in each one of those four divisions, to talk to us about what they were going to be doing. Tom Litkowski, formerly of WGBH, formerly of AOL, and now of Comcast. He is their VP in charge of accessibility. He will be speaking at our national convention, and you will find that those of you who have the older set-top boxes with Comcast will find that you will have an SAP button by August. That's pretty soon. And that within the next 9 months, as they roll out the latest set-top boxes, while that older system you'll be able to turn on and off SAP independently, the others who get the newer set-top boxes as they roll out will have access to on-screen menus, not starting in 2 years, but starting in less than one. I would say that's real leadership. Now, they're not going to announce this publicly because, you know, there's, you know, we don't want to make promises we can't keep, but I'm not with Comcast, so I can make promises they can't keep. Oh. But I'm absolutely convinced that they're not just talking the talk, they're walking the walk. So we will get that, if not by Comcast right away, by some of the other companies, and I bet you they speed up their process just because they don't want to be the one who trails Comcast by very much. There are going to be times that the equipment itself doesn't lend itself to this whole process at all. And Paul mentioned it, and that is satellite. When Comcast says we're going to set aside a channel for audio description, they're not setting aside that many channels off the satellite system. They're setting off one for each of the repeaters, and that's not much. However, remember that those of you with dishes on your house, I use dishes in my kitchen, but if you have one on your ceiling, or on your roof, that's fine with me. But if you have a dish on your ceiling, or pardon me, roof, then there's another issue, because they have to have that second channel times every customer. Every customer. You know that term, undue burden? Those words are carefully not in the CVAA. However, all of the rest of the providers of cable service are rallying around the concerns of those who run these satellite systems. So under those circumstances, there was a lot of pushback. We eventually won it. We got the 2 years instead of the five they were asking for. We keep going to them whenever they try to file for an exception and argue against the exceptions. But all of that kind of thing is happening. And again, there's never been a better time. I would wish that, you know, the content and the how to access the content happened at the same time. But in as much as it didn't, we nonetheless are seeing real, real progress in all of this. So that's audio description on television today. A little bit about audio description on television in the future. And again, and Kim can give you that list of shows.
What about AT&T viewers? Are they going to do that with AT&T and Verizon?
AT&T and Verizon and all of them must distribute by October 2015 equipment that will make that happen for you. Must, not may. So lastly, I want to tell you about the future, because TV is not on your TV these days exclusively. There's things like YouTube, Netflix, and the list goes on and on and on. Recently, you may have seen some posts about how Netflix now has made a commitment to make sure that all of their content is captioned. Not some of it, not in the biggest markets, all captioned. So you can imagine what ACB is doing with this. We are talking to them about first making sure that any time a source movie or TV program was described, that when it's put over one of these services, it will be described. Simply pass through what's already exists, and we'll have a huge increase in what we can do in these online approaches toward things. Remember, the ADA was passed many years ago, before all of this explosion took place. So we got pushback in terms of mandatory description on television. We won that battle the second time through, not through the courts, but back through Congress. And we're in the process of doing the very same thing to make sure that even though it doesn't say in the ADA that on-demand content by video over the internet shall be accessible, they nonetheless are interpreting it that way through the Department of Justice. They're describing it that way through the FCC. And the bill, one of the two bills that I was dealing with in Washington, D.C. on Tuesday, also has to do with this access to media when it's on the internet. And I think we're going to have some real, real success in that very soon. I'm going to pass it now on to Paul.
They've actually covered most of it. And so I'm probably just going to add three things. And I'm going to get Brian or Kim to fill in the blanks here. The real issue is, if we want these things to happen, we can't sit idly by and expect that they will. Because if we do that, essentially they won't. So one of the things that we have to do is, when we live in an area like Tampa or Miami and ought to have access to video-described movies and don't, it's necessary that we file complaints. And on our ACB website now, we have created a very easy-to-use, simple complaint form that folks can fill out. If we don't use it, shame on us. Because if we don't use it, the fact is these people are going to say nobody wants it, nobody cares, so why should we bother? We have to create a groundswell of people who really want this service and who are really interested in seeing it happen. And when, as happened to me a week ago, I called my provider and essentially was told, we don't do that, we never do that, we aren't doing that, we won't do that, I filed a complaint the next day. Because it's what we have to do. So that's one thing. I think that the one other thing that I would add, and then we'll open it up to some questions, is we are in a strangely wonderful situation. And the one area that these guys haven't covered is the emerging area of described movies in theaters. As more and more chains are converting to digital distribution systems within their theaters, we are no longer at a place where audio description is only available in a single theater for whatever movie the theater determines maybe people who are blind want to see. And more audio description is becoming available in all of the theaters. And because the technology that they're using once they've done their digital conversion is much more reliable, from what I have heard, and I have so far not been to one of these digital theaters, but from what I've heard, the signals for the audio description are much more reliable. Syncing is not an issue. That is S-Y-N-C, not S-I-N-K. Syncing is not an issue. So the bottom line is we suddenly have access to a pretty large number of movies that are available every week in many places where we can go see movies with our friends at theaters. The importance of what Brian was talking about at the end is where we have the fall off is that probably, Brian, would you say no more than 5% of the movies that are actually described in theaters ever find their way onto DVDs?
That's correct.
Yeah. So the bottom line is, whereas in the past we had an outfit like WGBH that made video cassettes that we could use, we now have much less access to described movies that we can watch at home or buy because we want to own them anymore. So those are the aspects that I wanted to cover. Anything else you two would like to add before we open it up?
I'm going to kibitz a couple of things in, and then Kim's going to give you a list of
good.
What shows you can anticipate watching.
Yep.
One is that right now, the first movie I ever saw in a movie theater with audio description was Titanic. And that is not a movie that a home experience can do justice to, in all honesty.
And I saw that with you guys.
And it was absolutely amazing. The last one I saw, and I was told during my hearing that Paul Schrader, you guys know Paul Schrader from AFB, right? That Paul's daughter texted him while I was doing my testimony before the Senate committee and indicated that I was so old school because I hadn't seen Iron Man 3 yet. I'd mentioned that the most recent movie I saw was Les Miserables. And I'll tell you, I don't think there's any comparison, but we'll just leave that alone. The last movie theater I went to had 16 screens and had 12 audio-described movies going on at the same time.
Wow. And that's what we can look forward
to. Consumer choice is possible.
Yes, it is.
Because the technology that they're installing in a screen-by-screen basis is done in such a way that you go to the customer service desk, pick up a headset, they tune it to the appropriate theater, and you walk into the theater and get that description going. It's pretty amazing stuff. This bill that I was talking about from Senator Harkin's office will require that this kind of equipment be in every theater in the United States with more than two screens if it's passed.
Wow.
Now, the likelihood is it's not going to get passed that way. Trust me, the guy testifying to my left that day was from the Theater Owners Association, and he claimed that already 53% of America's theaters have audio description and captioning equipment. What he didn't acknowledge is they had first-generation equipment, And right now, the 63 theaters in Massachusetts that have audio description in them, more than half of them aren't functioning today because they haven't installed the newer equipment. And the material is coming to them from the distribution companies in the new format,
right,
not the old format.
And the first generation, for the most part, didn't work well anyway.
Well, it depended on how you held your head and if the person behind you minded if you were holding up the cord on your earphone in such a way that it could act as an antenna, you know, things like that. So, again, movies in theaters. And as I said when Kim was talking about what do live theaters want to see happen when they do this? They want people to come. What do you suppose movie theaters want to do when they invest in this? They want you to go to the movies. We can't keep advocating for things that people don't take advantage of. Go out of your way. Yes, you could sit in your living room or wait for it to come on pay-per-view, but I'm telling you that we can't keep accessibility rolling this way if we don't take advantage of it. There's nothing like going to the theater, smelling the popcorn, feeling sticky things under your feet.
Excuse me, eating the popcorn.
Depends on which program you're on there, Paul.
I see.
Anyway, I just want you to know that it is doable. It's being done, and it's up to you and me to see that it's being done where we live. The technology exists. Do you know, if you put together all the people who go to theme parks, all the people who go to professional sporting events in a year, they still don't add up to as many people as who go to the movies in a movie theater. Mm. And we are not there in droves.
We are not.
We need to be there.
Ms. Kim.
Yes. So, again, I just want to encourage you to take this on at the chapter level, to find out if you have a theater with accessible cinemas in your area. Organize an event. Do a movie night with your chapter. Talk to the theater management and get them to round up some additional headsets so that you can have an event with 20 people coming to go to the movies together at a local movie house. And become friends with the theater managers and make it a media event. The theaters would be thrilled to have a little publicity to showing what you're doing in your community, accessing the new technologies. And, you know, we need the advocates at the local level to advocate for the live theater, to advocate for the movies.
And the press thinks blind people are so photogenic. I mean, the press will really reach out and do this, you guys. They will.
They will. It's a good story. And look for a champion in your community to tackle the AT&Ts and the local cable provider to get audio description for television working in your community. It took me 6 months to get all the stations in Boston to be all on the same page. When I tuned in at 8 o'clock on CBS to watch NCIS, one of my favorite shows, that I was actually getting the description. They had issues, each of the channels, each of the networks. Even WGBH had a problem broadcasting. They were telling me that I could only get the broadcast signal on the high-definition channels. And I said, that's not what CVAA says. You're supposed to offer it on the standard definition channels, too. Why should blind people have to pay for high def when we can't take advantage of high def? So standard cable. And I pushed back at all of them, and now it works on standard cable, standard definition, and high definition for audio description. So you may find issues like that you have to tackle. And you know, I'm happy to be a resource to connect you with national people who can really make things happen. And I have to say, the FCC has really been supportive of what the blindness community is having to go through, because this is not a perfect rollout of audio description for television. Not everything was all lined up as nice and pretty as we would have liked it to be, but it's all happening. It's happening. We have to just get there. And so that's part of the challenge, but we need everybody to work with us on the process.
Well, I have a question. How many headsets are the theaters required to have? What if you have a theater, they only have one or two headsets, and there's four or five people that are visually impaired that want to go to see the show?
I don't know what the requirement is for how many headsets, but if you want it to take more than four people, I would contact the management and say, we want to come. We have a group of 8 people coming. How can you get headsets for all 8 of us? And let them figure it out. They need to figure it out. They belong to a chain. They can order from one of the other theaters in their chain.
But the typical answer to your question is 6 to 8.
Yeah, I think 4 would be under what they're supposed to have, because you could have a technical issue.
But I don't think it's spelled out in any regulation.
I don't either.
That's a decision that they've made.
Yeah, but try working, you know, working with your theater management
and most of them will say they never expect to use 8.
Right, exactly.
Unfortunately.
I have a...
Would you like to hear the shows that are out there on the networks with audio description? Because I have a list here. And then we'll take some more questions. So I'm going to... This is, I think, the most recent list. And if anybody knows of something that's described that I don't say, feel free to chime in. So I'll start with ABC. ABC currently describes Last Man Standing, The Middle, Suburgatory, Modern Family, Happy Endings, and Don't Trust the Bee in Apartment 223, I think is what it is. I've never seen that one. And they will most likely add new sitcoms, The Neighbors, which they have added, and Nashville is also described. CBS. CBS does CSI. Thank you. CSI, Criminal Minds, NCIS, NCIS Los Angeles, plus movies and miniseries. Now, I want to say one thing about CBS. All throughout the time when the mandate was overturned in 2002 up until 2011, CBS continued to describe CSI and NCIS, and they didn't have to. There wasn't a mandate for them. So they stayed committed, and so did Fox. Fox currently describes The Simpsons, Hotel Hell, Master Chef. I know they do some other ones, too, that are not on my list. I think Restaurant Impossible or something, or Hell's Kitchen, one of those. So there are some new ones coming out. NBC does the Betty White reality show, Off Their Rockers, Grimm, yeah, Saving Hope, The Office, Up All Night, and Parks and Recreation. They also do Chicago Fire, that isn't on my list. That's a pretty good show. And somebody does The Following, and I can't remember what channel that's on. Disney does Jesse, Ant Farm, and the Phineas and Ferb. Nickelodeon, Dora the Explorer. Yuzumi. And Team, I think. TNT and TBS do The Closer. House of Pain, and For Better or Worse, and USA does reruns of NCIS, Law and Order SVU. Law and Order SVU is also done on NBC, and I didn't have that on my list. Royal Pain and Suits. So those are just a sampling of all the shows out there.
No.
Fox was The Simpsons. And Hotel Hell and a few others. Yes, and Turner Classic Movies that is not part of it, but also has been committed for a long time to the movies on the Turner Classic Movie Channel are described.
Okay, we don't have a lot of time, so we can take two quick questions if they're very fast.
I have one, quick. A statement. A lot of people, when we used to have audio or analog TV, you could go out in your store and buy a TV radio, which would pick up the audio signal.
Wouldn't pick up audio description.
Right. Now what? Well, audio signal, period. Now, since they've gone digital, everything has gone to a menu format. What are they going to do about that to where a blind person... Now, I have a friend in California who makes a radio that is just digital TV for the blind. If anybody wants to know about it, they can email me
Give us your name and email address.
Okay, my name is Don Wilkerson at Radiomaster at CenturyLink.net. And I will give you all the information on how to get this radio.
Yeah, but that's the only radio I know that picks up a digital signal is the one made by Richard Ohm out in California.
That is him.
That's right.
That's the one I'm talking about.
He's done a nice job with that radio. It's Don Wilkerson, and it's Radio Master at
CenturyLink.net.
That's C-E-N-T-U-R-Y, sir?
Yes.
Thank you. All right, next question, quick.
Okay, actually, I have two questions.
Quick.
I'm in Pinellas County. We got the Cobb Theater, and they have the headphones. It's a descriptive video. I have a hearing problem. They also have the for the hearing impaired. But the thing is, it's one or the other, not both. So I hear the descriptive video. I mean, you know, I hear that. But I have to have my hearing aids on because you can't do both.
I know. That is absolutely true. I don't know anywhere where they can filter the signal through and give you assisted listening and audio description on the same channel.
Why couldn't she get two headsets and use one in each ear?
I could kind of, I'll just put a hearing aid in one ear and use one of the, half a headset for the other part.
But you got to be multi-ear and one in each ear, I think.
All right, so that's one of your questions.
Yeah, that was one of my questions, if they were going to improve on that. The other one was about the TV, okay? If you can't afford to have a set-top box and you have SAP, it just seems... Okay, I have Bright House, and it just seems like the only descriptive video that I've heard that I've actually been able to watch is on Turner Classic. There used to be Masterpiece Theater on PBS that I can no longer watch, and I wrote them, and they never never emailed me back, of course. But, I'd like to know, do you have to... Like, my apartment complex pays for Bright House, so I just have the basic, and there's not enough descriptive video on the basic. Can you comment on that, please?
What you need to do is file a complaint. For any channels that are not providing, you need to fill out a complaint form to the FCC and send it in. Especially if you've already emailed once and have gotten no response.
Remember that all four of the channels that are required to put out 4 hours are on basic cable.
Right.
All four of them. So that's
16.
We didn't
also.
Even mention PBS, who should be there, absolutely. So if you're not getting it, that's why we've... You know what all these laws are based on? They're complaint-driven. Our parents taught us not to complain. We're trying to unlearn that, okay? You need to complain to make the system work.
All right, last question.
It's Debbie Downey.
Yes, ma'am.
First, I want to let you know that American Foundation for the Blind has a website, or part of their website, where you can find out what shows have audio description in your area. You put your zip code in and your cable provider, and they will tell you which ones are coming up. So that's cool. But my question is, what if your cable provider is passing through the signal, but you just can't access it? And they tell you, the same thing. Can you have a friend? Don't you have somebody? I'm so sick of hearing that. So would that be a complaint in itself, too?
Sure.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Cool.
Because they have an obligation not only to pass the signal through, but to provide the customer service and the support that enables you to access it. It is not sufficient for them to simply make the signal available.
And don't hesitate to say, I'm not satisfied with that answer. I want to talk to a supervisor.
Right.
And some of the technicians that come
technicians don't know what audio description is. There's a lot of training.
Yep.
There's a lot of turnover in the cable companies with the teleservice people. And sometimes you have to get to the engineer level before you get to somebody who actually understands even what audio description is. So don't hesitate to push on that.
Okay. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, this has been fun. Go watch some TV.
Okay, that's going to conclude the video description portion, and that will conclude...
As everybody knows, we're now at the point where
our
where
presentation.
We have more concurrent meetings. These meetings deserve your attention. CCLVI is our organization for folks with low vision. CCTV is our organization for folks who are totally blind. We also have Randall Shepherd vendors who are meeting. We have a presentation that is being done as well by one of our guests from Ohio who's going to tell you how to fix all those things your wife wants you to fix around the house or all those things your husband wants you to fix around the house. So we hope you'll go to Kent's workshop if you have nothing else to do. And then we'll have happy hour a little after 6 and our banquet at 7. Trivia night. Don't forget at 5:30 to visit the silent auction table so you can get an idea of what some of the cool stuff that is going to be biddable on in a silent auction tonight. And we'll explain more about that when we get to the banquet. And thank you very much and goodbye.